This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 3rd of September, 2021. And we are seeing quite a melt up if you look around the world. Of course, U.S. equities have been posting some new highs for the cycle recently. It was an up day again yesterday, pretty modest in terms of momentum. We have discussed, however, the S&P moving actually beyond the rate of gains that it's seen in prior months, wondering if this eventually leads to a destabilization. But really wanted to pull out the focus and look at some other markets. I saw Europe actually teasing the all-time highs, or at least the highs for the cycle. There was a big high back in 2007, to be fair, in the Euro Stoxx 50, but that pulled back slightly. And then overnight, Japan really on fire. There's been quite a recovery there, and it's added to that recovery, breaking above the 200-day moving average. But especially the news that Prime Minister Suga is resigning and he will not run for re-election as party leader ahead of elections that must take place before, I believe it's November 28th. So markets enjoying this, of course, also enjoying the risk on in general, the weaker yen, but a bit of additional pump in the markets, probably from the idea that some of the rivals to take over leadership are more geared towards even more and generous fiscal stimulus. So we've seen that. Big move overnight. Peter, you've argued the Japanese market, you know, we've talked about valuations quite a bit lately. The U.S. valuations are quite aggressive, not so much in Japan, even though we're still relatively close to the highs for the cycle.
Yeah, I think, this Suga event has the potential to be the same catalyst if things go well, as we saw with Abe and Abenomics back in 2012, where we had a tremendous rally in Japanese equities, if I recall it correctly.
You do.
Yeah, thanks. And vastly outperforming MSCI World. And I think something similar could happen. I was reading through some of the local takes from market strategists in Japan, and they all seem pretty aligned that this is a positive event for Japanese equities. So it will probably lead to a policy change, more stimulus. So I think this is definitely something to watch for investors, because it's, you know, Japanese equities are trading at a 25 to 30% discount to the MSCI World. In terms of our theme baskets, there's not much to report from yesterday's session, and although it was, you know, U.S. interest rates continues to be quite calm, and as a result, you saw all the growth baskets performing pretty well. The flag we want to wave today, and we started already, I think, last week in the week.
Yeah, we've been talking about it recently, last couple of weeks, really.
Yeah, we have. And now we're in September, historically, not a very good month for equities. And I just updated our valuation models on the MSCI World and the MSCI USA index. And as I told you, John, look at this is on slide 3, by the way. If you look at the MSCI USA index, so that would include the S&P 500 and the Russell 2000. We just hit 2.3 standard deviation above the mean since 1995 in terms of valuations. So as you can see, I mean, it actually makes the .com valuation levels look pretty minor. So again, slide 3 here, and then the MSCI World is flirting with the highs and are actually essentially above the levels we had during the .com in peak in 2000. So I think this is just our message, and we've talked about, you know, the lack of drawdowns in the market. We're now at 218 trading sessions with, you know, a drawdown of less than 5%, second longest over two decades. So I think it is really time to either get a better balance, a little bit less growth stocks, look at more value, defensive plays, think about, you know, maybe exiting or reducing some of your very profitable position. It has been an extraordinary rally over the past year. And we don't know what the catalyst will be, but these good times have a tendency to end in a very abrupt way. So have that in mind.
Yeah. And the ironic thing being here, timing wise, that we've seen quite a shift, certainly in FX, towards a much more positive risk sentiment, risk stance. So I wonder if we've entered some sort of the window of some sort of final melt up here. If you look at where FX has been, kind of recapping what I've talked about in recent days, but you're just seeing a continuation of yesterday, a very strong recovery in Aussie, and the positioning there very, very bad for those for upside. So obviously some of this is a squeeze on short positions with that crowded positioning. You can see on slide 4, so that Aussie dollar recovery all the way back to that really key line, that flat line is, by the way, the old highs just above 74. We've recovered all the way back towards there. You see the head and shoulders formation line coming back in. I would argue 75 to 76 zone is really key for if we're going to mount a full charge on the 80 top. But for now, everything's sort of shifted into risk on mode in FX. You're seeing it in emerging markets. You're seeing it in the fact that both the yen, the dollar, and the Swiss franc are weak, as you can see from the trend readings. So, yeah. It is very much risk on stance. And we are seeing a bit of a shift as well, Ola, in the commodity space. Are we not with some of the latest developments?
We are, John, and we are actually, I think we've been through a correction here, or at least a consolidation phase in commodities, and it's gone a little bit under the radar during the past months. But as you can see on slide six, on the one of the ETFs tracking the Bloomberg Commodity Index, we are basically almost back to the highest we saw, pretty close to the highest we saw back in July, which is the highest levels in 5 years. So we are toying with new highs, and energy and industrial metals has been the drivers this past week. We know we're seeing these stories about what's going on in the gas market, where we've got record prices around the world, but also the oil market, which is starting to recover. We've seen the OPEC increasing production, but at the same time, we're also seeing countries like Nigeria and Angola struggling to meet their quotas. So they are producing well below where they are allowed to quote. And that raises the question of how much the spare capacity is actually is outside the GCC countries. The only the negative part this past week has been the hurricane related to Ida. As we mentioned yesterday, the grain sector is lower because export capabilities out of the from terminals on the Gulf Coast has been hampered and tampered with, and that could take some time. And this is happening at a critical time where the U.S. harvest is just about to start. So obviously, farmers need to shift their grains in order not to fill up their silos or to above capacity. So that's putting some prices downward pressure on the price in the grain market. But generally, overall, commodities is a sector that we still look for, where we still look for further gains over the coming months, especially the whole green metal development, which is still only just about to kick off.
Yeah, and you put in a chart as well, the latest chart of shipping container prices for the various shipping routes around the world. And this theme is really evident in that ISM manufacturing, as I highlighted, I believe it was yesterday, in which the overall survey was quite strong, but you're seeing the details and you see in the anecdotal reports. And yeah, you're seeing in the employment figure, which is below 50, even in a strong report, they're simply not hiring. They can't find qualified workers, and or they can't get the parts to actually increase the production and the demand that they're actually seeing. So it's you're just seeing it reflected in these crazy container rates.
Indeed, we got bottlenecks all over the place, especially still on the major route from Asia, i.e. from China to the US and also to Europe. And this just highlighting the craziness of this market. One of the bulk company, Golden Ocean in Norway, they came out the other day basically saying that they're working on transforming some of the ships so they can basically hold cargo. As I said, that they can transport the box on top of the cargo that the normally is a ship. So that just indicate that shipping companies, they really want to try to take advantage of these incredibly high rates, if they can get the containers, of course.
Yeah. And I'll get your thoughts on precious metals in a moment. We need to get to the agenda for today, and that is the U.S. jobs report and to what degree anticipation here. But of course, if we get a massive surprise, I would guess more to the upside than the downside is where the surprise level is. I'll say if there is a big surprise, it's going to move the market, at least in treasury terms. Is that your read as well, or is this really the big thing that the treasury market is looking at right now?
Well, absolutely, John. I believe that depending on today's non-farm payroll, the bond market is going to position ahead of the FOMC meeting, because if jobs exceed expectations by a lot, then there is no reason for the Federal Reserve to wait into tapering, and so an announcement could come as soon as September and starting as soon as October. If that were the case, it means that the 10-year yields, which we see in slide number 8, have the potential to rise as high as 1.5% ahead of the FOMC meeting. However, John, it's quite surprising to say that, but we cannot exclude a bond rally, because if non-farm payrolls disappoint, then of course the expectations is for the Federal Reserve to push forward this tapering later or during the year. So 10-year yields have the potential to break lower to test their support at 1.12. And if they break this level, they can go as low as 1%. But John, in the long term, I'm a bond bears, and I'm not the only one right out there.
And we've talked a lot about the dynamics are going to change so much for this market into the end of the year, because we have this amazing flood of liquidity, in part because the Treasury winding down its account, its general account at the Fed, a process that is now has to be complete now that they're all the way down to the sort of the middle or even low of the historic range, $250 billion. They'll need to rebuild those reserves once we get this debt ceiling situation out of the way. And I wonder as well whether the bond market, I know we shouldn't fear too much. They're going to get something done with the debt ceiling. It will get raised. It's how long they might draw it out. But you're actually seeing some signs as well in the shortest term government debt. And there's a bit of anticipation around this event as well, this debt ceiling.
Absolutely.
Which you're calling the dilemma. Yeah.
I think that what we see in money markets is that the investors prefers to invest in other maturities other than those falling very close to a possible default rate, a day of the U.S. Treasuries. So yesterday we had the 8-week and 4-week T-bills auctions. The spread between the two widened to 3 basis points. The funny thing is that the bid to cover was very weak on the 8-week auction, while the 4 weeks was quite solid. And the 8-week T-bills priced at 0.065%, which is 1.5 basis points above the reverse repo facility. So all of this just to say, expect more volatility in money market if a debt ceiling resolution is not reached and as we approach the end of October.
All right. And Ola, just wanted to circle back. I mentioned on FX that we're seeing this dollar quite a bit weaker, the safe havens doing poorly. And apparently gold is getting lumped into the safe haven category because we see it fairly stable, but not exactly shooting the lights out. Do you think there's any anticipation, or do you get the sense there's any anticipation in the market around this U.S. data release or the debt ceiling debate or dilemma, et cetera?
Well, something is most certainly preventing the market from responding in a manner that you would have thought during a week like this, where we've seen the dollar weaken quite a bit. We've seen stable treasury yields. Gold is trading within a $20 range. It's not made any attempt really to challenge that key resistance above at 1835, as you see on slide 7, and likewise in silver above at 2450. So it obviously raised the question, well, what if we don't get a gold supportive job reported today, i.e. one that will continue to keep yields at current low levels, then there is a risk of another short-term correction, because the market is clearly lacking momentum right now. And it does indicate that early August slump, there's a lot of cautiousness out there. And also you can't blame them, because gold is used as a diversifier. And when you've got stock markets, as Peter mentioned, at these levels, then and continue to go up, then you don't need that diversifier. So what could change it? Well, a continued rally in crude oil up towards the $80 level, signs of emerging weakness in the stock market, or just simply a break above that 1835, which I think will attract some renewed momentum, which could take the focus back towards that 1900 level. But clearly, I would say on balance, a disappointing week for precious metals, given what's just happened on the outside markets.
All right, let's look at the macro calendar for today. And we have, of course, the non-farm payrolls change expected out at plus 725. And then we have the unemployment rate. And look at the average hourly earnings. These are expected in at plus 4%. That is quite high. It's actually higher than the range prior to the pandemic. But looking at the Atlanta Fed's median wage index, we are getting towards the high of the range. It would need to break above 4% to merit some other broader confirmation of that wage pressures could be becoming an issue. And then we have this ISM services survey. I'm actually a bit more interested in this one than the employment report. expected a 61.7, which looks a bit strong to me relative to what we've seen elsewhere, especially the drop all the way to 55.2 in the other private market survey. But that's what's expected, 61.7. The prior in July was 64.1. And do note the calendar for next week. The main thing to point out is this is a three-day weekend in the U.S. It's Labor Day holiday. It's traditionally the end of the summer in the U.S., getting back to school, back to work, fully on everyone on board on Tuesday next week in the U.S. And we have quite a few central banks out as well. Not necessarily expecting a lot from these, but they're certainly worth watching, especially I think the ECB and the Russian Central Bank you can see on Thursday and Friday, respectively. We'll have more on the German election next week. This is a really key focus. The SPD continues to gain momentum. We're seeing even bigger gains in the polls just in a matter of day by day. These are growing, and this has really big implications for Europe. Could be an additional support for the euro going forward. For now, have a great weekend out there. Be careful, and we'll see you back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.